Coming up on today's show.
It's kind of like going into a marriage or relationship with three, four other people. So one person can bring down the whole relationship. So you have to be, choose wisely.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the San Francisco Bay Area, my guest is lead vocalist and guitar player for the rockabilly band Emery Villains. Last year, the band did two single releases, putting out a music video for one of them last October, and they have been active performing there in Northern California with more dates next month and even as far out as September. They have even performed up in Washington State and in Oregon. My guest has also been a member of the heavy metal band Mordred. You have been hearing an Emery Villains song titled Emery Villain Boogie. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Scott Holderby.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Thank you for taking time out to talk to me. And let's get started by having you share first about the song that was just playing called Emery Villain Boogie.
Well, that right there is just a little story about our town, Emeryville, and there's not much to it. We like hot rods, we like Western and rockabilly music, and it's a tradition that's been happening for generations.
Is that something where you just decided, hey, this is time that we recognize the town and give it some musical support, some musical attention?
Well, the band name is Emery Villains. And the spot that we pretty much began playing is in Emeryville. And the lady that we play with, Rhoda, who's 93, her nickname was the Emery Villain. So it all just kind of went together like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's do some background setting. How old were you? And I should say, how did you get started into playing music?
Well, I was pretty young, 4 or 5.
Whoa.
And my grandpa put my first guitar in my hands. It was his guitar, and taught me my first chords. And well, my fingers hurt like hell, but he promised if I kept at it, the pain would go away. And he was right. Well, the pain never went away, but the pain of your fingers went away. And I never stopped. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Was that a case of you kind of just knew that's something you were going to stick with indefinitely? Did you ever, wander from it, come back, wander from it, come back? Or was it just, once that was in my hands, I pretty much never put it down?
Well, for me, I really can't remember a time in my life where I wasn't playing music, singing, playing music. So it was, I was bit by the lifelong bug, and I'm a lifer. Still doing it now.
Did you ever get to a point where you said, okay, if I'm going to take this seriously, I need to start getting some guitar lessons, voice lessons, et cetera? Or was everything either self-taught or grandpa taught?
Yeah, the beginnings of it were definitely grandpa taught. But when I was a youngster, I definitely went and had some guitar lessons and switched over to playing bass when I was about probably 13 or 14. And played bass up until I started doing Emery Villains again. And since I started playing Emery Villains music, I switched over to guitar because we had a fabulous stand-up doghouse bass player, Hank, that I couldn't even step near what he's plucking and pulling on that thing. So it's really nice because I feel like I did and like I'm carrying on some kind of music that my grandpa turned me on to as a real youngster.
Wow.
It kind of feels good.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. So set the record straight as far as switching to bass at some point. Was that curiosity? Was it boredom with playing guitar? Was it a combination of the two? What made you switch to bass at some point? Or maybe it was, I'm a rebellious teen and watch me, I can do this.
Well, no. When I was a little kid playing guitar and taking lessons at Fiat Music, they had a bass in the front. And I saw it and I wanted to play it. And finally, they let me play it. And I knew, I fell in love, you know, like that was going to be my thing. And everybody played guitar back then, or drums. Nobody played bass and nobody sang. So I did both. And it kept me busy for many, many years. And I don't regret it for a minute, but it's funny because I really haven't picked up that bass in quite a while. I've been doing the guitar thing for a minute. And I'm all guitar nerd now. Like, you know, it's unstoppable guitar nerd. I never have enough guitars or gear, man.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, chasing the tone, you know.
Is the music that Emery Villains play, is that inspired? Was that what Grandpa was playing? Was that what Grandpa was listening to?
Well, yeah, actually, it's pretty similar. His style was like, he came from doing like square dances and stuff like that. Mm. So cowboy chords and everything. But listen to, at the time, like, you know, Bob Wills, Texas Playboys, and Webb Pierce and Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, and all that stuff. That's where I heard all that stuff.
Okay.
And then my dad, he was, you know, Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, and Django Reinhardt, I might have heard, you know, along the way too. That's definitely a big influence there, for sure, for sure. But I was just lucky enough that there was a lot of music around me, and my other set of grandparents, my mom's folks, they were really into a lot of swing stuff.
Ah.
So I was exposed to that from a young age. And, you know, at the time, I don't know if I really appreciated it, but as I aged, I really, really like was turned on to it again in a different way. And it feels good listening to it, and it feels good playing it.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm sort of singing with another group that we're just kind of messing around getting started, but it's 1930s kind of swing stuff.
Wow.
So
wow.
I've been bit by the swing bug, not just Western swing and rockabilly. But I just keep going backwards in time and discovering and rediscovering great music that I want to play.
Well, and something tells me that your audience is grateful that you are, because in my humble opinion, I feel like there's not enough of it out there. So I'm sure that the fans are thrilled that Emery Villains is doing the type of music that they are, because you're not hearing it everywhere you turn in 2026.
I hope that the people that we play to seem to really like it. And it's really a lot of people dancing, and it's mainly upbeat numbers, and maybe do one slower one. But in the world we live in, you know, everyone needs to get out and have a good time. And we provide the musical backdrop for anyone's, you know, good night. You get a fat hit of serotonin. So why not have a good time with Emery Villains, right?
I like it. It sounds like a little commercial. So clarify for us then, when and with whom did you put out your first albums?
Okay. So funny enough, in the early days, just in high school and getting out of high school era, I joined a band, Mordred, Bay Area thrash metal band. And we got a record deal right away and made a record in 1988. Fool's Game, and we released a few more records over the years, toured US and Europe mostly. And incidentally, that's where I started playing with Danny White. He was playing in Mordred also, and he's our guitar picker extraordinaire with Emery Villains as well.
Okay, wait a minute. Now, it sounded like you said, and I want you to clarify this, because it sounded like you said that right out of high school the band got a record deal.
Yeah, it's true. At the time, and in my high school in the Bay Area, a lot of the local bands were, you know, blowing up and getting record deals. And my high school, Possessed, went there, a couple guys from Primus, and just various people from other bands that were making records. So it was, and Hank, bass player, also went to that high school. So we came up with a large group of pretty high level musicians coming out of Pinole, and several got record deals and made records and stuff, which was, at the time, that was the big deal. You got a record deal, you were in good shape, and you toured, and it was so much fun. I'm not going
Okay,
to
but I
lie.
want to be clear though, because I'm not sure I'm understanding. So, was it a big deal that you got a record deal, or was it, no, Bruce, I'm telling you, everybody was getting record deals, so it wasn't.
Well, it was a big deal because everyone wasn't getting it. It wasn't a big deal in that I was the only one that had one. But, because the guys in Primus, they were doing well, and Possessed, they came along before Mordred and were doing well. And there were others. It wasn't a thing where everybody had it.
Okay.
But it was at a time when the Bay Area music was blowing up. So bands that I didn't go to high school with, but like Forbidden Evil and Violence and Exodus were a little older than us because Metallica had made the style really popular and Slayer. So yeah, those were like the kind of bands we were like going to see at Ruthie's Inn was the place we all went to. And a lot of like punk rock and stuff went through there. And that was kind of when
Wow.
punk rock and heavy metal sort of merged together into this. Nobody called it crossover then, but they do now.
Yeah.
But it was just because like there was less and less places for the punk bands to play, and thrash metal was close enough, and of a similar mind. It wasn't at all like the sort of hair metal from that same era. It was like it was more like coming from a punk rock kind of background kind of thing. So it merged together perfectly, and that was where like we all hung out and turned into all of these bands that ended up making records and still are out there touring, some of them making records.
And audience, I'd love if you would go back, way back to episode 308 of this show. It's from more than 6 years ago, but Death Angel was my guest on episode 308. They are from the Bay Area. And in fact, at the time that we were doing that interview, they were up for a Grammy in the best metal performance category. And you heard already, Scott has been talking about rockabilly, and we're going to continue to talk about that. Episode 167, way back, 9 years ago, Aileen Quinn, who had played Annie in the 1982 motion picture of the same name, she had Aileen Quinn and the Leapin' Lizards. That's the style of music that they do. So go back and listen to that one as well. I'll put links to both of those episodes on the show page for Scott's episode on NHTE.net. Folks, I hope you know how much I appreciate you listening to the show each week. I really want to meet anyone I can to say a personal thank you face to face for listening to Now Hear This Entertainment. But beyond that, I want to involve you some way in the show, which is why each week I put out the invitation for you to email me through podcast@nhte.net so as to contribute to a mailbag segment. Write to me with a question, maybe a particular episode you enjoyed and why, or perhaps send me a lesson that you learned from a particular interview. And on an upcoming episode, I will read some or all of your email, as well as where you are located and at least your first name. It is all part of my way to express how much you listening means to me. Scott, I have to ask you started to go there, but let's continue talking about Danny White, the guitarist from Mordred, your first band. He's playing in Emery Villains, and that is quite a difference in style. How did playing rockabilly, western swing, and hillbilly jazz come from a thrash metal background? I know I'm asking you to speak for someone else, but obviously you know him well. You've known him a long time.
Yeah, like a brother. We fight like brothers, and we're like brothers, true blue to the end. Well, strangely enough, we were both exposed to Western swing early on in our lives. So, Danny, as a young man, through his father, and myself, as a young man, through my grandfather. And back in the Mordred days, we listened to all kind of different styles of music and incorporated lots of different influences and things. So we definitely incorporated a little bit of that in our playing back then. But I've transitioned through a couple of different groups with Danny. We played funk music together back in probably the late 80s, early 90s. And we've done a few different things, and the influences are different, but that man can play the guitar, and he could play pretty much any style. So it was easy. He just fit right in, and he's got his own thing that he does. It's not exactly what everyone else in the style would necessarily do. He's kind of he makes it a slightly more jazzy, hillbilly jazz, rockabilly swing thing, I guess. I don't know. But I think all the riffing probably has led to the more riffing in Emery Villains. I don't know. And I hope I'm doing Danny justice. I'm sure he'd have more to say about it than me, but what can you do?
But if I take a step back, I have to wonder, you know, from the outside looking in, you see someone going from a thrash metal background to rockabilly, western swing, hillbilly, jazz, and you say, how do you get there? But I wonder, Scott, if perhaps it's a combination of as one matures and as one gets more and more experience in their music career, and you're talking about what a great guitar player he is, so I wonder if those factors make that transition not so eye-popping to someone who thinks, wow, how do you go from thrash metal to that?
Well, there's a lot in between there, for sure. But I think you put it pretty eloquently, and that's about it, yeah. Yeah. So all of our experiences in life bring us to, you know, find other play. I feel like I'm at home playing this music, and I know Danny does as well. And so, you know, I probably wouldn't have when we were in our early 20s and late teens when we were doing Mordred and stuff. Maybe I wouldn't. But I heard Wayne Hancock play when I was back in the mid 90s, and that was like a big influence too. You know, just he's like the king of Western swing and has been for, you know, at least since the 90s, but really influential in the style of music that we do, which is kind of a, you know, a retro 40s, 50s style of kind of swing country, with a little bluegrass and a little bit of maybe some gypsy jazz added in there just for good measure, for flavoring.
The fans of your band will know this, but for me and the uninitiated, talk about Rhoda and how does she fit into Emery Villains?
Oh, okay. Well, Rhoda is like our matriarch and our meemaw all wrapped into one. And it was really when I met her before she adopted me as her grandson and so forth, I was painting her house and playing some music outside. And she's like, oh, I played in a band. Do you want to hear it? And I'm like, sure. And she plays it. And it's this really, really high level rockabilly kind of Western swing stuff. And I'm just blown away. I'm like, this is your band? She's like, oh yeah, my one brother sings, my other brother plays guitar. They both, you know, they were the backup band for Johnny Cash when he came to town, and for various other people on this radio show, on this TV show and all this. And she had some recordings that were just really good. And I'm like, well, what are you doing with this music? She's like, what do you mean? What am I doing? Let's play it. So we just started playing it, and in playing with her, you learn sort of like the little style inflections that you might not get just doing it on your own. And as far as writing songs go, once she sort of made me understand how this stuff all works, it was like I had opened up a door that just made it so much fun to write stories. And the structure was, you know, kind of, it felt like I was home and I could just really play this music till I'm gone. I love it so much.
Did you say earlier that she's 94?
She's 93, but she's close to 94.
Wow.
She doesn't come out now and play gigs with us like she did. She used to sit in and we'd play a few songs with her and everything. Sometimes we do a whole set with her, depending on for a three set night or whatever. But yeah, she hasn't been coming out and doing that lately. But we still go over to her house a couple times a week and play, and she could go for hours. She could play like 2-3 sets when we're just hanging out. So it's I think the one thing that I hope that I have, and that I hope that all my musician friends have, is just like people that will come over and continue to play with them as they get older. Because there's so much value in what the older people, the older generation knows. And, you know, she's born in 1933.
Wow.
And came out from Arkansas. And funny thing, she's like from 30 miles away from where my grandparents are from in Oklahoma. And, you know, I heard her accent the first time and it sounded like my grandparents. And it just felt like home. I walked in the house and I smelled the smells and I looked around and it just felt like home. So I adopted myself a third grandma. What happened there? And she calls me like a grandma, treats me like a grandkid. And, and we still play, you know, a few couple times a week at least, you know.
So cool.
Yeah. I would suggest for everybody, if they don't have their grandparents anymore, adopt another grandparent. You will not be sorry. Yeah.
You kind of hinted at some of the things that you can learn from being around someone like that. Are those nuances things that you just learn from her by observation, or is it direct teaching, the things that, like you said, are you're not going to get those just going to a music store for lessons?
Well, I already knew how to make the chords, but it's definitely a style and a groove, and it's like funk. It seems like when you hear it, oh, you know, it should be easy to play, but it's not. It takes some knowledge to be able to hit a serious groove. You know, you can't just pick up and do it. And it's the same thing with this, but once you really understand it, and she taught less as a like music teacher and more of through osmosis.
Yeah.
And through all the crazy stories of all the stuff, they were so debaucherous back then. I don't even think in my day I could have kept up with them. She tells some funny stories of what they were up to, and you know, it's like it's pretty funny. But I'm like, wow, okay. But yeah, I think it's more of a like just you know, the learning through osmosis and stuff. And once you kind of got it, you can kind of do it. You can, you know, you could be sent off into your own stories and your own, because you know the structure. It's simple, but then you do something a little bit maybe clever with the turnaround on the chords or add some extra thing here or there. But it's pretty straight ahead.
Yeah. You mentioned where your grandparents are from. I should have asked you the following question back when you were talking about being 4 years old when you first started playing guitar, but are you not originally from Northern California yourself?
I'm originally from Northern California, but my father and my grandparents came out from Oklahoma.
Ah, okay.
Back in the 40s, same time that Rhoda's family came out to work in the shipyards for World War II.
Wow.
So on the other side, though, my family goes back to pre-1906 quake San Francisco. And I've got a whole bunch of photographs that my aunt took the next day after the quake. And they're just really great. And like they're family, you know, pictures. So you've never seen them before. But I got a couple framed around the house.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah. So I grew up in the house that my great grandpa built. My mom still lives there. In the town of Crockett is where I grew up. And so fourth generation Crockett. But I moved to Emeryville about 23 or so years ago when we were my wife was pregnant. We were about to have a boy, a little one, who's now 22. So he's not so little. He's got a band of his own, too.
Wow.
You might want to interview him.
Just keeps getting passed down from generation to generation, it sounds like.
It does, yeah. He's doing recording engineering too. Actually, he's the recording engineer for all the Emery Dillon stuff. He records us.
You just talked about Rhoda and you had already told us about Danny White. So while we're getting to know the various members of the band, how about Hank, your bass player? How did y'all meet and start playing together?
Ah, yeah. Hank was a high school friend and really we didn't play together back then. But we always knew each other, and he's a real great bass player, always has been. And when we had run into each other a while back and talked about doing just a straight-up rockabilly band, So when I connected with Rhoda and we started doing this, I just called him right up and he's like, I played him some of the songs and he's like, oh yeah, dude, I'll be right over.
Wow.
So it was like that. He was just in right in there and brought his doghouse bass out and, you know, just like pulling and clacking on that thing, keeping the time. It
Wow.
was, yeah, it was really nice. But yeah, I used to play with, when I was playing bass and singing, I played in something with his little brother. So I knew Hank from back in way back,
Okay.
but it's really been nice connecting with him. And we always kind of had a similar, we looked like we could be brothers, you know, kind of thing. Back when we were all rock and rolled out, we had the same curly black hair, and now we still look like brothers.
Amazing.
A lot of people confuse us of, you know, of being brothers and don't believe
Amazing.
us when we say we're not. But yeah, but they're both like my brothers, you know.
Wonderful. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the San Francisco Bay Area by lead vocalist and guitar player for the rockabilly band Emery Villains, Scott Holderby. Visit the band's official website at emeryvillainsband.com. I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Purchase downloads of their music from iTunes and other online digital music retailers. You can stream Emery Villains' music as well on Spotify, where I would encourage you to give the band a follow. Not only is there a link for that on their official website, but you will also see links there to engage with them on social media, specifically Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Check their website as well for dates and locations as far as going to see them perform live. Meanwhile, I do want to send a personal public thank you to Stephen McClintock, the guest back on episode 624. He was kind enough to buy me a coffee. You hear me talking about it each week, and he did just that, as you will see when you go there. He wrote a really nice note that said, quote, "I really enjoy the variety and the great questions you ask. Clearly, you do your homework," end quote. And then I replied back to him, but you can see all this for yourself and maybe follow his lead and buy me a coffee as well. On my podcast website, nhte.net, there is a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button that will take you to that platform. You will see Stephen McClintock on there and others before him showing their support and expressing their thanks for Now Hear This Entertainment. Scott, how do you come up with the stories and the subject matter for the songs that you write?
Well, really from the dark recesses of my mind and my past involvement in Satanism and no, I'm just kidding. Really it's just I think that I choose dark themes which exist in rockabilly and have always murder ballads and that sort of thing, but probably a little bit from the background of, you know, coming out of a metal background, it gives me darker stories. Not all of them are. I mean, there's plenty that are not. But there tends to be, you know, stories of vampirism and, you know, your loved one passing away but staying back and haunting you. That's haunted. And yeah, the curse. There's, you know, there's dark themes going on running through there. But then, you know, also happy songs and songs that make you want to cry. I don't know. They sort of come to me.
Pardon my naivety, but is there such a thing as, you know, getting an idea and then starting to workshop it in your head and you say to yourself, wait a minute, this would never work as rockabilly. This is a completely different genre. Is there such a thing, or can anything be turned into a rockabilly song?
Well, I don't come at it from that angle, so I get a thought or a chorus or an idea that already is rockabilly. And so, or, you know, Western kind of swing stuff, you know, kind of 40s stuff. And I think really they just kind of come to you. I mean, I hate to be all like, you know, the from the other side or something like that and sound all freaky, but, you know, in a way, I feel like sometimes I've tapped into something older that wants to help me write a song, and sometimes they come as full songs with
Wow.
you know, music and everything. And so, and that's happened before, and I've gotten a song and I sang it, put it down, and you know, I'll sing the song and then I'll put the guitar to it. And I realized, like, wow, this one's an E flat. That's kind of weird. And then I remember the older style of tuning was more E flat because it was 437. So I'm like, I wonder if there's anything to it. And I hope there is. I'd like there to be, I'd like to think that. So.
I think what you're saying is, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, when you've done it as long as you have, the songs come naturally to you in the genre that you're in. In other words, someone who's always writing country songs, he or she is always going to just be inclined to just have something come out that way. That's why you're telling me that no, it's not a case of being off limits. I just got this muscle memory where the ideas that come to me, they're already in the style that we're used to playing.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate, is
Got
that
it. Got it.
I can do, if you write another song in another style, that's fine. And we do other stylistic kind of stuff, even with Emeryville. It's got like a little soul to it, maybe, that's not Western swing or rockabilly at all. But it's still kind of got the swing groove to it. It all kind of fits together in its own puzzle type piece way. But yeah, I don't generally kind of like write a more of like a metal type song and then put it to the Western swing. But it is kind of fun to take songs that exist by like Van Halen or whoever and turn it into a Western swing song. That's kind of fun.
Interesting. As we heard in the first half of the show, Rhoda, of course, is a big influence on you guys, but what are some of your other influences?
Oh, I'd say it mostly things from years past, Lubin Brothers, Stanley Brothers, Ralph Stanley, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Elvis, Hank Williams, Webb Pierce, Hawkshaw Hawkins, Django Reinhardt for sure, Lead Belly, any old time swing music, from the 30s more. But there's some great bands that are out playing now that are really great and influence me too a bit, like Petunia and the Vipers. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're great. Petunia and the Vipers. I mentioned Wayne Hancock before. Pokey Lafarge. He's good. There's a bunch out there that are kind of keeping the style alive and doing it justice. Really, really good to have all these bands out right now. I would like to play with all of them.
And I like that you are citing some current bands also, because I think when someone gets asked a question about influences, they tend to think of who did I listen to as a kid or who was I listening to when I first started playing music. And it is fair to say, I also nowadays listen to insert bands here, such as you're doing. So that's a refreshing answer.
Oh, I appreciate it. Yeah. And I mean, I could list a million other influences musically, Sly and the Family Stone or, just all the music Stax Records made. I used to work at a recording studio and they owned the whole Stax Record library. So my job was to go up and pull the old Stax Records tapes and find any song that wasn't released. So
Whoa.
that's a dream job, really. I know.
Wow.
So I got exposed to a lot of that stuff,
Wow.
when I was still in Mordred and everything. And then at the time working there, I was assistant engineer on different gigs and stuff. So I got to work with B.B. King and
Oh my
John Lee
gosh.
Hooker and
Oh my gosh.
Carlos Santana.
Whoa.
Did a bunch of stuff with him. And I got to work with Jim Gaines, who's passed away recently, but he was just a really, really, really great guy. And you would never know, but he's like, he did Steve Miller, Fly Like an Eagle, amongst hundreds of other just brilliant, great albums. And you'd never know talking to him. But he taught me a lot about, recording engineering and everything like that. And to
Wow.
have my son carry that on is really great. And he works with some of the people that I worked with at Fantasy back in the day. At this new studio he's working at. So it's kind of nice. Full circle, family.
Your son is Harley, and Dave Tweedy, they are your production team on the recording side. What do Harley and Dave Tweedy do specifically?
Well, Harley's my son, So he owes. He must record all my stuff. No, I'm just kidding. He actually seems to like it. He acts like he does, so I hope he does. But no, he does all the recording for it and comes up with harmonies, and he's really helpful in a lot of ways. And then Dave Tweedy is my oldest friend. Well, I know I have older friends, but my longest lasting friend. And his parents and my parents were best friends, and from the time I was in the crib with them, like in the playpen or whatever, since we're babies. And it's nice when you come up with somebody because he's a really good drummer. And we played together ever since we were little kids. And he's professional musician and professional in the business, doing soundtracks and all sorts of things. But we, having someone that is like that, as the kid you grow up with your whole life and your best pal when you're older, more like a brother, it's nice. And you push each other to be better musicians. And he is, so he's doing all the mixing and all the mastering and all that stuff. And he'll argue with me. I'm like, I want something some way or another. And he's like, he's adamant. He wants it to be a specific way. And he's, I'm like, okay, I don't want to go against what you're saying. You're probably right. But for him to have like such a strong opinion that he would like, argue my sound with me, it's I couldn't ask for a better friend and a better mixing engineer. And I'm really lucky I got both those guys working with me.
Yeah, the support is wonderful, and obviously it's beneficial to have someone that is a friend, but also is really looking out for your best interests and feels that strongly about their position to express it in the way that you're describing that Dave does.
Yeah. I know. I'm lucky. I don't know why how I got so lucky. And then my brother-in-law is also a like really high-end mixing and engineer and everything. So I'm kind of surrounded by that. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
lucky in that case. Yeah.
Back when I was giving out all the online destinations for the band, one of the social media platforms I mentioned is YouTube, and I see that you have several videos out. It looks like almost every song released has one. Just tell us a little bit about that process.
I can't even say if I like making videos more than recording music because it is so much fun. And the fella that's done all of the videos, his name's Chris Powell, and he's like one of my also my best pals, and we've been friends for so long. And he's even played in a couple bands together. He's played in Mordred. So we all it's nice close friend group, and just like family kind of vibe. And it's so much fun making those videos. We have such a good time.
Is this a case of where you're just as active with the, I'll call it storyboarding of the videos as you are with the creating of the songs?
Definitely. But Chris, because he works in the business and everything, he knows, I come to him with some ideas or some way I want to do it, and he makes it into a reality. He can't do everything I think of. But he has a lot of great ideas too, and we do a lot of things that he suggests. So I couldn't even imagine doing it with anybody else. It's just so nice and fun and comfortable. And yeah, my goal is to make a video for every single song we put out. So I hope we can keep with that. We're falling behind. We've got like three that don't have a video, but we'll catch up.
Throughout our conversation, you've mentioned a lot of people that you're surrounded with who are friends. And I would love for you to just kind of speak to that as it relates to there are certain people who will tell you, don't go into business with family or in the music business, don't start a band with your friends. It'll ruin the friendship. You're going to have to pick, are you bandmates or are you friends? And you're obviously having success doing both. So I'd love for you to just talk about that a little bit, especially for anyone listening who might find themselves in that position and are kind of deciding, do I go into it because they're my friends? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea?
Well, it's mostly a good idea. The only bad side would be if you get to a place in your band or your music creation that their playing is not up to level and you have to deal with letting them go. I can't really think of that. I've been lucky in that all the players seem to be pretty top level that I've been lucky enough to be able to work with. And a lot of the people that I have worked with over time didn't start out as close friends, but you get in situations where you're touring and you're recording and you're together a lot, and you become very tight friends and even like brothers and sisters. And so going into band situations with, like, say, Dave Tweedy, the only downside would be when they have more bands than you and you're not getting enough of their time or something like that. So, there's that, but I can't really think of too many negatives to that. Having people around you that you can trust, that won't rip you off if there's ever money around, who has your back when people are talking about you and you're not around.
Wow.
Having people that you feel are true blue and have your back is really, really where it's at. And I know that it's kind of like going into a marriage or relationship with three, four other people. So one person can bring down the whole relationship. So you have to be, choose wisely. But I've had many bands and they've broken up for various reasons, but less because of somebody's bad personality or something like that. But that happens all the time, where somebody's just a real dick and they take down the whole thing. And that can happen. So I don't know. I give it mostly a thumbs up, but be careful going into it, maybe.
Yeah,
That's it.
and we've still got a couple other things I want to cover. By no means am I wrapping up, but I want to say that we've had a really wonderful conversation, but everything that you just said, I think is gold. I hope that the audience has stuck around to this far into the episode because everything else before it was really good, but this is just such significant advice that you're giving out, such a great vantage point that you've shared. And I'm really glad that we got to talk about that. I do want to know what the plans are for the future, though. Touring, more recordings, hopes and dreams, all of the above.
Yeah, well, definitely more recording because we're almost finished with our first full-length LP with some of the songs that are already out. And then right away, there's a second one that's all standards, and we call it Family Standards. And that's all the songs from the early Emery Villains, from Rhoda's brothers and her, and a couple from our friend Paul's uncle. And just family standards. So it's not songs we've written, but that one should be coming out relatively soon after the first one. And then we've already written our second full length LP, whatever. But we haven't
Wow.
we got a couple of songs into that, but we got to finish up a couple of things before we start really pushing that one
Wow.
and making more videos. We want to get a video for every song if we can. And touring, we did a little bit and it tasted good, and we'd love to tour Europe and
Whoa.
different places in the United States. We toured a lot of Europe in Madrid and stuff, so I definitely love going over there. And there's a big rockabilly Western kind of scene over there in Spain and different other countries, France and some in Italy. And so we're hoping to get over there once our records are out. That's the goal and the hopes and the dreams. And we're going to try everything to make that.
I'll tell you read my mind because as you were talking about going to Europe, in my head I thought, well, obviously they're going to have to do some research to make sure that there's going to be audiences over there that support this kind of music. And lo and behold, you've already done it. You already know.
We do, yeah. And there's other local people that go over there and play a lot. There's this fellow, Mitch Polzak, and the Royal Deuces. And, him, and then there's this other fellow from LA, Deke Dickerson, and he plays with the Centurions. And they're always going over there doing stuff. So I was hoping at some point, ping pong us on the backside of that Big Brother, please, and make the introductions or whatever. So I'm just like hopes and dreams, definitely. I hope and dream that that will be the case soon.
Either that put us on the same bill with you, or oh, I promise you, no, what? It was no, it's just a coincidence that we went over there and played every single venue that you did.
Yeah, Really, I look at it as, anything. I hope more bands want to help each other out. We do anything we can to help other bands out. But really, through word of mouth and the bands that we play with that come over from there to play here, Lovesick Duo there's been a couple others that we played with that we're hoping that at least in their town we could have a good gig with them and
Yeah,
put together
nice.
something like,
Yeah.
that's the hopes and
Yeah, I
dreams.
like it.
Yeah,
I
and if
like it.
somebody out there is a booking agent and really likes the vibe of what Emery Villains are doing, we'd like to work with you and let's go to Europe. Let's
Yeah,
go to
no
South
doubt.
America.
No doubt.
Let's go to Japan.
We're gonna close today with another song from the Emery Villains, one called Haunted. Scott, before I let you go and we play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Okay, this one is as if your significant other wife has passed away, but they've stayed on to haunt you. And they slide the chairs, break the dishes, wake you up for work, the regular stuff. It's a spiritual, happy song about death.
But it's almost as if I can imagine you writing the song and at the same time already picturing in your head the video that you're going to make to go with it for a song like
You're not too far off.
that.
It was probably a little while after I had written it that I thought of the video, but it probably wasn't too far off.
So cool. So cool. Scott, this has been wonderful. Thank you ever so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment, and really great to learn all that we did today, audience, about Emery Villains. So I'm going to give you their links again in just a minute so you can go check them out. But Scott, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. And thanks everybody for listening. And I hope that you all enjoy Emery Villains. Thank you so much.
And with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to the lead vocalist and guitar player for the rockabilly band Emery Villains, Scott Holderby. Again, visit the band's official website at emeryvillainsband.com. As I said earlier, I will put a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Purchase downloads of their music from iTunes and other online digital music retailers. You can stream Emery Villains music as well on Spotify, where I would encourage you to give the band a follow. Not only is there a link for that on their official website, but you will also see links there to engage with them on social media, specifically Facebook, Instagram, and as you heard us talk about, YouTube. Check their website as well for dates and locations as far as going to see them perform live. That will do it for episode 643. Thanks ever so much for listening. I will send you out today with another song from the Emery Villains. This is the one that Scott just talked about. It's called Haunted.
That night I travel that lonesome road back to the place that was our home. And when I get there and the air I taste, I can smell your perfume and I see your face. Well, I go walking that trail alone, these old dark woods that we used to roam down by the river. I can hear you call, I can still say I love you, and that's not all. That's not everything. You're not gone. That's not the dishes, you slide our chairs. I know your wishes, I know you're there. I hear you haunting all through. I just want to hold. We talk by Ouija and old radio. You can tell me all your troubles and all your woes, and I'm just sitting alone in the bar. I hear that rumble, sounds like your car. It keeps on rolling, ain't trying to slow. You can pick me up right here when I'm ready to go. Cause that's not everything. You're not gone. That's not the end of things. Our love is too strong. My heart still beats in time with your name. And if there's some